Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have as our guest Carla Hannaford, and her book is Playing in the Unified Field, Raising and Becoming Conscious, Creative Human Beings. Carla, I want to welcome you to the show, and I have to say I envy you. You're in Kona, Hawaii. Oh, nice
well,
warm.
If it helps, it's cloudy today.
Oh. Well, that doesn't help much. It's always cloudy in Seattle. The sunshine and everything that you get there is just absolutely wonderful. Kona is just gorgeous. Carla, I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You're a biologist and have been involved with education for, my goodness, well over 40 years. And you've been both as a teacher in positioning as well as a counselor. And you've worked internationally. You've done all kinds of workshops. You were involved in a particular Soviet project in 1988. You've gotten awards from the University of Hawaii and the American Association for the Advancement of Science for outstanding teaching in science. So you have been in what we would describe as the global educational system. And I was intrigued when I received your publication. And I thought, well, let's see, what are we going to have with this? What is it's going to go on? And my listeners know that I review anywhere from 400 to 600 books a year. And when I started reading yours, the paragraph that caught my attention was right in your foreword, and it was written by William Tiller. And he said, much of what we may dislike in our present society cannot be effectively changed from the outside, because such exterior conditions merely reflect that which is collectively within us. We must each first intentionally change ourselves within, then the outer collective congruent manifestations in space-time will naturally occur. If we perform high-quality inner work, the outer materialized transformations can also be of high quality. Now, this man is a professor emeritus of Stanford University, and after I finished reading your foreword, I said, I like this man. I put that in big letters at the end there. How did you and Professor Tiller come together, or Dr. Tiller, I should say?
You know, one of the things I do is I attend consciousness conferences. They occur every 2 years somewhere in the world, and these are researchers on consciousness that come from all over the world to talk. And that's where I first met Dr. Tiller, William Tiller. And just an amazing man. I was immediately taken with his heart. You know, not only is he a great scientist, I think one of the top in the world today, but he has a wonderful heart. And so we have been in communication for a very long time now. This is since 1994 was the first consciousness conference that I met him at. He also was a presenter on the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? And also Down the Rabbit Hole. And his research is profound. I'll tell you, it's an amazing body of research that I think many of the scientists, the quantum physicists today, are tying into his research because it's replicable. And his books are wonderful, but for me, almost totally unreadable because it's all math and, you know, very high-level equational material. But he really knows what he's doing, and he's doing some phenomenal things. So I was very honored when he, you know, suggested that he would write my foreword. He loved my book.
Well, his words were very powerful, and I think that his statements were just so accurate. Now, you said a statement in your preface that great masters and children in their natural state seem to yield and flow with life, willing to see everything as a process for growth and every situation a doorway to higher consciousness, higher order. When I started reading these statements, I thought this book is really going to be different because you're coming from a whole different paradigm, but you've had quite a few challenges in dealing with what all of us have to deal with, and that is, how do we let go of the garbage? How do we let go of those belief systems, those particular paradigms that maybe were okay 75 to 100 years ago because that was part of the survival package, but they don't really have a place in the context that they were accepted in at that time in this world, in this time frame, with what we are evolving through. Tell us a little bit about your journey and what you found in your paradigms that really got rattled severely so that you had to say, excuse me, but I think I better wake up. I've been sleeping for too long.
You know, I think one of the main paradigms I had to do with the place of women in our society. And I was always curious about things. And so when I went into the sciences, which was a male field at that time, and I've talked with Candace Pert about this a lot too, we weren't very accepted. I was the first woman to get a master's degree from Colorado State University in zoology.
Oh, my. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't pleasant. You know, I realized later they had given me $50 for my research, and they had given all the other, you know, graduate students, the men, $500. And it was kind of a joke around the department, I guess. But, you know, I'm very motivated. And so, you know, looking at that paradigm, and of course, the women's movement was happening in the 1970s, and mm-hmm. I was teaching at Community College of Denver, which I loved because these were older people, older students that were really there to learn. I taught at Colorado State before that, and these were young, you know, newbies to education, mm-hmm. most of them, and large classes there, 500 in a classroom, whereas Community College, I have 25 to 30, and these were older students. And the women's movement was happening, and I taught a course in conjunction with another woman who taught literature of women. I taught biology of women. And it was a time of really looking again at who we are, where is our place in society. And it was exciting. The times were exciting and frustrating at the same time, you know, with the very male paradigm. And I think things have really shifted, and we're looking at ourselves, first of all, more globally. Secondly, the importance of both the feminine and the masculine in an integrated, egalitarian kind of society where the gifts of all are extremely important to what we're facing today and coming up with the answers and the solutions to the
dilemma. Now, what was your biggest challenge, though? You mentioned this time as a teacher in the women's movement, but what was your big aha that made you say, I must change my way of thinking? Because the wisdom that you express in your book about changing consciousness, this doesn't happen in a split second.
No.
Usually an experience triggers this awakening, and then we have to sort of grow into it. Is that what happened with you? And what was the particular experience?
Oh, boy. You know, there were many. I think there were many. One was I didn't read till I was 10, and I was very gregarious. I was very curious. I would spend a lot of time in the forest, in nature, but I didn't read till the age of 10. And so my daughter, when she came along, couldn't read. So I think that propelled me also to looking at, you know, what is education?
Mm-hmm.
And what is important in education, what's important in empowering people, young people. And then, you know, I think one of the great things that happened to me is I was asked to work in the schools, just a 9-week pilot project with the intermediate schools here in Kona, the intermediate school, with the CSAP program, which was Comprehensive Student Alienation Program. And I did it because I was a single parent at that time. My daughter was just going into the intermediate school, and I could be with her. And she mm-hmm. was mortified I would do this to her. But I was I had learned some techniques that I was bringing to this. One were super learning, which was using sound, beat a second music to activate alpha brainwave activity to assist learning. I was using it in mm-hmm. my university classes. The other was brain gym, which were cross-lateral integrated movements. And I had no idea what to expect because I had gone to a workshop that I was interested in, and the nurse practitioner there said, boy, if you're going to work with these kids, you need to know about brain gym. And as a scientist, it was the most important laboratory I could be in because I didn't know what to expect. And these students just doing these little movements that I was doing and having this beat a second music on in the background, you know, were doing things that the teachers were astounded by. I had one student, Jesse, that had come into was in this program, you know, and I'd seen him 3 times was all, and his English teacher came to me and said, what are you doing with Jesse? And I said, oh, we're doing a little cross crawl and hookups and lazy eights rise, and I have this music on. And I said, why? And she says, you don't know about Jesse? Well, they'd handed me all the charts of the students before I started, but I'm teaching full-time at the university as a full-time single parent and doing this pilot project. I didn't read the folders, so I had no preconceived notions, which was perfect. And so when Jesse came to me, I looked at this kid and I thought, gee, I think he's older. And he was 17. He'd been held mm-hmm. back and held back. And she said, you know, he's mean. Everybody's afraid of him. He was big and mean, and he's probably beaten from the day he was born. And he couldn't read, was her take on it, you know. And she came to me because after these 3 sessions, I mean, it was a week and a half after I met him, he had volunteered to read in the English class.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was just blown away. And she said, what are you doing? And then I started getting the other teachers coming to me and saying, what are you doing? And I said, well, these little movements, these cross-lateral movements. And then I needed to know what mm-hmm. is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And this pilot project that was supposed to be 9 weeks ended up being 4 years long. And the next year, the principal from the grade school asked if I would be the counselor for special ed. And I said yes, because I was fascinated by what I was seeing. And I'm not a counselor. I love it. Just one of the experiences, too, that changed my life. It had me mm-hmm. really look at this deeply and who I'm working with. Who are these people, these young people? And I really enjoyed these kids that had been labeled as, you know, deficient in learning and
mm-hmm.
and behavior and everything. I really love them. And it was interesting. I came into the elementary school as a counselor. I'm not a counselor. I'm a biologist. And the counselor there says, you're not a counselor. Come watch me. And I sat in his office one day, and all these little kids that would come in, these cute little kids, he'd say, you've been bad. Now you go back and be good in class. And I thought, ooh, that didn't feel good. Well, that Friday we had a conference for counselors in Honolulu. And I went. And the keynote speaker was the warden for the maximum security male prison. I thought, this is going to be great. But he said something that I have never forgotten. He said, when one of those inmates walks through the door, I say to myself, what has this man come to teach me? What is the dance we're to do together?
What profound words.
Profound. And so here were these little kids coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would, as they would come in, it's like, okay, what has this child come to teach me? What is the dance? And I got it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that same statement you started with, masters and children, they are absolutely coherent. They're in the moment. They are curious. They're aware. Einstein, I love Einstein.
Are you still with me?
I am.
Oh, there we go. Something bleeped you out, so I just said, so go ahead. You were started with Einstein. You were going to say something, and then you disappeared for a second. Okay.
Whoops. Einstein's quote that I think really I'm attempting to live by now. He says, I have no special gifts. I am just passionately curious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we all need to be right now. You know, as we look at the quantum physics of who we actually are, we're so much bigger, so much more than we have been taught that we were. And, of course, working with the education system, and I'm still doing it,
mm-hmm.
and still, whenever I get a chance, when I'm off the road, I do music in the schools here with the kids, and I need to know what's going on, but we have an education system right now that is really dishonoring
mm-hmm.
to the human spirit.
I agree.
And this is our future, these people that are coming up now, and we need to empower them. We need them to know who they are and their potential and keep them curious, you know. So anyway, there have been a lot of situations in my life that have really shifted my focus, and I'm starting to really question everything. You know, we are powerful. We are masters. We are creators of our reality, and we can change the old belief systems, and it's very exciting.
Oh, I agree, but it also brings a lot of tumultuous response and rippling, because not everybody's going to be that flexible. It's a frightening thing to realize that maybe what you had been taught or what you bought into for whatever reason at a certain time in your life no longer fits you. It's like someone in their 60s trying to wear what they wore when they were teenagers. It doesn't work. It doesn't look good, much less fit.
Right.
So it is that flow towards change that frequently is so challenging, and many people want to hang on to whatever they have because that's all they've known, and they're fearful. Fear is a tremendous thing. But I want to touch on a couple of other points in your book that I found extremely interesting. You did a lot of scientific study as you were going through college, and one of the things you discovered was that single-celled organisms are multilingual. Now, when anybody would hear that, I pulled that out because I said, I love this kind of a statement, because I believe that there are so many multiple levels of communication. To me, everything has an intelligent level to it. And, of course, whenever I make a statement like that to anybody, they say, yeah, right, a rock has intelligence. How do you know that it doesn't?
Right.
There is nothing that is in this universe that doesn't have an energy frequency about it of some kind. And if nothing else, it can change the form of its matter from whatever may evolve, whatever happens in the way life goes. And someone listening to me may say, Donna, you really have lost it. You really have gone out to lunar la-la land. But it is something that life is, period. And it is expressing itself in so many different dimensional capacities that the human brain to wrap around it with the logical, scientific level of perception and expectation we close ourselves off. And that's what quantum physics has done. It's just blown the lid off of a lot of things, and it's disrupting so many things. It's not even funny, and it's occurring on so many different mediums. It's very unsettling because the change is happening at such a rate. But I found equally fascinating, your statement in here about dyslexia. And one of the reasons that I had such a strong relationship to it when I was reading it is because a very dear friend of mine has a daughter who is very, very bright. This young lady has just come in from college. She has finished a degree. She had to work 1,000 times harder than other students around her, severely dyslexic. And in your book, you said dyslexia has been found to be primarily a hearing problem and only secondarily a reading problem. And I went click. Her mother has serious problems with hearing. Her daughter may well have inherited a level of hearing challenge that her mother has not recognized.
Right.
And her mother is living it. Her mother, and her mother's not, you know, she's in her 50s at this time. But I thought, this is fabulous to be able to be aware of this, because that means you come about educating students with dyslexia from an entirely different positioning. You also go into the utilization, and I come full circle with this, about using music in the background. And I think that that is so vitally important, because the stimulus of the vibrational frequency to a child's brain, in addition to an adult's brain, it doesn't make any difference. Our brains don't have to atrophy. We don't end up becoming a blob of blimpless mentality just because we get older. It's not the way it's supposed to be. But when you incorporate this understanding that you have expressed in your book, and you express these different things, I thought, holy Moses, what a wonderful way to be able to work with children. And then you go into another aspect regarding the educational system that was developed in Denmark. It was first conceived by Friedrich, that's how probably it's properly pronounced, Froebel, in Germany over 150 years ago in the Wald Kindergarten. Tell us about this. You have got so much good information in your book regarding these different modalities and how you've grown into them. How come nobody's ever heard about this with Denmark? I mean, this is amazing what they're doing with the children. And it's teaching them self-sufficiency. I mean, here in the United States, we are dumbing down our system so much. We are not respecting the capacities of intelligence that these children have. And I can tell you, I'm experiencing children who at the age of 3, and I was experiencing this back in the 90s when I was doing storytelling with 3-year-olds, and I'm seeing these children holding a very articulate conversation with me. And they're 3 to 4 years of age. Excuse me, we don't dumb down to this.
Right.
We appreciate it and respect it. So tell us about this system. This, I think, is fabulous.
Well, you have hit on so many things. Okay, so the fourth kindergarten. But let me just say something that I think is really important tying into this. What we know now, that just interestingly enough, you said, you know, we don't, as we get older, we don't get dumber. We don't. In fact, the research, in 1999, a huge thing happened with, we realized that we are actually growing new nerve cells until the day we die.
Right.
In the hippocampus, the memory center of the brain, but it's also in the olfactory area, and we're finding new growth of nerve cells along the spine, until the day we die. And what we discovered is the thing that allows that growth to occur, or stimulates that growth to occur, is movement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, movement and sound are intimately connected in our developing body. And we even know that embryos will respond to sound as early as 23 days in utero.
Yes.
And probably earlier. We just haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's occurring earlier. And we're also looking at, and I talk about this in my book, the fact that our form, our physical form, the template for that is sound vibration. It's the slowest vibration. And So sound is extremely important. The semicircular canals of the inner ear, fully developed by between a month and 9 weeks after conception. And it's the first organ in our body that is fully developed. And the semicircular canals at that time have to do with vibration, sound, and movement, and the balance within our body. So these are really important. So sound. So what I love about Frederick Fobel and the Forest Kindergarten, I came across these Forest Kindergartens in 1992 when I was in Germany, actually. And Frederick Fobel is also from Germany, and he actually developed this over 100 years ago. The Germans had quit using it. The Danes had picked it up. And Peter, who was part of this, had gone to Denmark to study it and brought it back to Germany at that time. And here I am. I'm walking in the forest one day that I have off, and it's in the Black Forest. And here are all these little kids. And they start to go to this at 2.5 years of age. In Denmark, they very strongly believe that those first few years of life are key to safety, to development of all the systems, and that there needs to be a parent at home with the children. So they provide the financing for at least one parent to be home with the children those first 2 years. And in Denmark, usually the husband and wife trade off. And then they have job security when they come back to work. And when they come back to work, the children can come to these forest kindergartens free. Or they can go to a regular kindergarten. And in Denmark, there is no reading, there's no writing, none of that, until the age of about 7.5 or 8, when the physiology of the body is ready to do that. And so these children come to the forest. About half of the children in Denmark go to the Vald Kindergarten, the forest kindergarten. And they go 5 days a week, 5 hours a day, no matter what the weather. And Frederick Fobel set these up because children were getting sick. And he said, they need to be outside in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So here are these children. Most of the time that they're there is spent in unstructured, unadulterated play. And they are learning from the forest, which is extremely complex, and they're learning from each other in this forest setting. There are times when the adults are working with them, and it's usually with music. So, they have, I have pictures of this, of these forest kindergartens with people with like an accordion, and they're playing the accordion. The children are dancing around and singing. They're singing. The most complex instrument on the planet is the human voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it actually tones the muscle structure of the body. It helps us maintain our tonus. And you'll notice with older people, as they lose part of their hearing, they take on this, what we see as a depressed posture. And they have a lot harder time with balance and equilibrium. And so the children sing, and they're toning their bodies. And they sing high. The very high tones actually activate the brain to take in information more readily. And we know this. I mean, just in August of last year, both Scientific American Mind and Science News had dedicated their whole journal to the importance of music and movement, and especially singing. And so you're activating all this system, and they're moving a lot. And they're climbing trees, and they're doing things that we think might be dangerous. But these children know their bodies, and they're developing a very important system called the vestibular system. The vestibular system is the vestibule into the brain. It wakes up the brain. And we know now, this is important, movement is this thing that grows these nerve cells. If we didn't move, we wouldn't need a brain.
Mm-hmm.
The most important areas of development within the brain have to do with movement and sound.
Absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Very
so
true.
So these two things are extremely important. So this is what's happening in these forest kindergartens. And they're fascinated. They're curious. And they're curious about things. So are the adults. And I have to tell you these stories. So I've attended a lot of forest kindergartens in both Germany, well, in Germany, Denmark, Sweden, and Finland. And just an example of how they teach the children. This is so amazing. In Sweden, we would meet at a place, and then we would walk for a half a mile into the forest. And when I visited them, this was the end of September, and it's cold. But the children come dressed for it. And these children are walking along, and they don't take the path. They're climbing up over these big rocks. And these children are 2.5 years old, on up to about 6 years of age. And my instinct is to help them on the rock as they're trying to climb up this rock. And the adults say, no, don't. They're developing their vestibular system, their balance system. These adults will not help the children unless the children ask. And if the child asks for help, the adult will say, how may I help you? So that the child has to do some deductive reasoning, say, you know, put your hand under my foot. So the children are really having to, you know, think about where they're what they're doing. So there's all of that. They have a ropes course. And again, the adults do not help the children unless they ask and how. Also, one of the little boys had fallen and was crying. And my instinct was to run to them. And the adults said, don't. The adults said, I looked at the child. They were fine. They needed that moment to figure out where their mistake was, why they fell. And so this adult leaned, just squatted down and opened their arms, and the little boy ran into their arms, and the adult hugged them, and it wasn't seconds, and the little boy was squirming to get out of their arms and go back and play.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're out of, Carla, I hate to cut you off, but we are out of time here. Your book is as passionate as you are when you're speaking. So anyone who is listening to this, Carla Hannaford has been my guest, and playing the unified field, she goes into the aspects of education, but let me tell you something. I don't care what your age is. Who you are as an individual is going to be created by what you are willing to expand your thinking into. It doesn't mean you become a puppet. It means you look at life as a glass half full instead of half empty. And Carla, your information is wonderful. I know there's a website people can go to, greatriverbooks.com, greatriverbooks.com. But to become conscious, to become creative, as human beings, we must be willing to learn. We must be willing to step outside of our paradigms. And Carla, your book just does such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful job with this. Carla Hannaford, I'm sorry we ran out of time. I want to thank you for being my guest. Enjoy your magnificent island refuge where you're able to continue to do what you love to do so much, and that is to grow and expand and keep up your writing. This is just wonderful. Playing in the unified field, raising and becoming conscious, creative human beings. A wonderful publication. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, is 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time listener, I invite you to join me and just give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. No, all I need is your first name or your initial. Of course, I love to know where you're calling in from. And then I will give you information about yourself, what's going on in your life. And if you have a question about anything that's of concern to you, you're more than welcome to ask it after I give you information. Again, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be playing The Best of Donna. We're going to be playing the show with Dr. Lundell. His book is titled The Cure for Heart Disease. The reason I'm wanting this played while I'm in the plane flying to New York is because this is important. We need to take a very proactive approach towards our own wellness. And having a member of my own family go through some challenges right now, and they have actually had to say no to certain things that have been put down as, gee whiz, this is what you must do. And the fact is that the physicians and nurses were just stunned. They just said, oh, well, I don't understand this. These are the protocols. However, the protocols were not correct. A lot of the information that was assumed was not correct. And it's important that we question. It's important we challenge. Remember, whenever you have someone that is going to be in charge of your body or overseeing certain things, we need to ask ourselves why we must accept what somebody else says, especially when it comes to certain types of medication. I am not a doctor, but I can tell you with volumes of material that I have read through the years, and I'm into my 10th year with my show, when you are talking with leading medical researchers and professionals, you'll find many of them are questioning as we need to question. Because we have to be educated to understand that we are responsible for our own wellness. So his show, Dr. Lundell, is going to be heard again on the show tomorrow. And if you have anybody that's ever had any concerns about cardiovascular disease, you need to listen to this show. And then we've got some wonderful guests. Now, we've got a caller on the line. We're going to be going right to that caller. And I'll tell you again the number if you want to call in and chat with me today, 888-815-9756. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial. And where are you calling
Hello,
in
Donna.
From?
Donna. My name is Linda.
And where are you calling in from, Linda?
From Washington State.
All right. First thing that I want to mention to you is that you're going to find yourself dealing with a contract. Now, you're going to read this contract very carefully. You're going to note whatever needs to be noted in this contract, and it will involve money. I'd like for you to lay the contract down and leave it alone for a day or two. I know you will have made notes. I would suggest you make a carbon copy of the contract and anything that comes to your mind so that you can scribble on that carbon copy. And then leave it alone for a day or two, because there's some things that are going to be running through your head. I would suggest that you would check with an attorney about the questions you might have. Let them give you an answer. Then, again, this all being done in a time frame of maybe a day or two. And then go back and reread the contract and reread it from a positioning of a different attitude. If you were going to be an individual that was making proposals and you wanted to get the best advantage, you put yourself in the other person's shoes. And you're going to get an entirely different perspective, and you're going to realize that two paragraphs have to be changed because there may be a liability exposure that you would not want to have. You also will need to have an out clause that is not included in it. And I think when you become aware of this, and it's going to be very subtle. You might be cleaning a bathroom floor, and all of a sudden it's like, ding, that's what I wasn't paying attention to. So you need to be involved in something physical that will allow you to get away from the thinking, the too strong and analytical process. And then you'll go back, and then you'll mention it to your attorney, and the attorney will say, wow, I would never have thought of that. That's genius. And you'll be able to amend this contract before you sign it, and the other party will agree to it, and then you're going to have a peace of mind. So there's a lot going on in relationship to money, but you're going to find yourself really very comfortable by the middle of June with the way things are leveling out. So there's not going to be a lot of stress regarding the dollar. Do you have a question for me?
I can't imagine what this contract is about.
I don't know. All I know is that I'm seeing it in front of you, and I'm seeing you going through it. So it's going to have to be just reconstructed in a couple. It might just be like three or four sentences that would have to be changed. That's all.
Okay. Well, I'm asking about a relationship. Do you see a relationship coming into my life?
No, not real soon. Not real soon. Although I'm looking at more social activity than what you've had in the past. And as I'm watching it, I'm feeling good about it because you're expanding yourself into arenas of social interaction with people that maybe you just sort of ignored. You might be invited, let's say, to a fundraiser for a political action of some kind, or maybe something that's involving a community, or maybe even another country. And you might more normally just say thanks, but no thanks. But for some reason, you're going to accept. And it's going to bring you into a whole new modality of people. And I think your social environment is going to be expanding. And you're going to be very discerning, and you're going to find that it's intriguing to you, the uniqueness of what you're going to be encountering in the way of people, their various financial positioning, social positionings. It's really going to be, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to enjoy the diversity.
So this will be somewhere on the island that I live?
No, I think it's going to be in a city area. I think it's a combination of environments. I just don't think it's one place. I think it's a combination of places.
So a relationship is down the road, huh?
Well, it's all relative, and it has to do with the interaction socially that's going to bring you into a whole new environment of people.
So going off island, huh?
Could be. Could be.
Well, we'll just have to wait and find out. And the whole thing about the radioactive fallout, mm-hmm. I've been wondering whether I do a garden this year or do I mow my lawn.
Don't worry about that. Your garden is going to be just fine.
Okay.
You don't have to be concerned about that in the least.
We'll apply Emoto's work.
Not going to have to worry about that at all. No, that's not going to be an issue.
All right, well, full steam ahead.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for your call. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, the number is worldwide toll-free, 888-815-9756. Now, though I'll be in the Big Apple, and as I mentioned to you a moment ago, I'll be flying in on Wednesday, and which is tomorrow, and then I will be doing an appearance on a panel at the National Publicity Summit and meeting literally 100 authors, and many of them are going to end up being guests on this show. But I wanted to let you know who I'm going to be on with on Thursday and Friday. on Thursday, the color of my underwear is blue. Now, who in the world would think a title like that has any relevance? Well, you're going to have to listen to Danny Lyon to find out where that came from and how it came about and why he chose that as the title of a book. And then AA is not the only way. Melanie Solomon. This is a very special book because Melanie is a woman that has experienced problems with addiction in her life. And she found that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work for her, and she learned that there were other ways that she could deal with this challenge. And that's what she is all about with this publication, is offering the opportunities to people in the way of information and education. If one option doesn't work for you, then try another. Getting through and getting over the addiction is primary, but know that there's more than one way that you can approach it, which is a true statement. So Melanie Solomon is going to be with me on Friday. I'm really looking forward to being in New York. It's one of my favorite cities. I love being in a place where you can stand in one spot and you can see people from around the world, just about every place on the planet, and they can walk by you in 15 minutes. It's an incredible environment. You can walk around a block in New York City and experience a diversity, whether it is with food, products, services, transportation, cultural interaction. It is amazing. It's a phenomenal environment, a phenomenal environment. And I'll share with you some of the things that I discover while I'm there, because it's always an adventure. It's also a place that if you're born to shop, woohoo, you'll have a blast in New York City. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break for just a moment. Hey, if you want to give me a call, 888-815-9756, give me a buzz. We're coming back in just a moment, and I've got some more good things to share with you. Or I'll chat with you instead, whatever you prefer. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. I wanted to share something with you. You know, yesterday we had the show about poltergeists, which I think is fascinating. And it's wonderful when you can talk to someone who is an investigative reporter. And I thought when I came across this particular story, I would share it with you because it was a nice compliment to what we had on yesterday. Now, this is called the Pune poltergeist. And these stories have been recorded. And when you hear about stories from different people, their different experiences, their different happenings, it's so intriguing because these people, many times people won't share their stories unless they're in a very private environment where they know nobody's going to make fun of them and put them down. This is what I enjoy about my work so much, because people can talk to me, they can be very comfortable. But I came across this story, and I wanted to share it with you. And this was about an experience that someone had, and the date was known. It was April 23rd, 1928, in Pune, India. Now, there was the eldest son of a Dr. Katkar, and he was involuntarily teleported to the doorway of a room where his mother was writing letters. The boy spoke to her. He was hanging limply in the air. It was as if somebody had him around his waist and had lifted him up. Now, over 3 years, the boy's aunt, whose name was Miss Khan, she documented hundreds. We're not talking about a few. We're talking about hundreds of incidences involving an 8-year-old adopted son called Damodar. Now, the boy had challenges with the toys that he was given. Toys would come up and out of the wooden toy box and fly at him. And one time, he was so disgusted with the way things were happening whenever he wanted to play with his toys that he put all of his toys, and remember, he's just 8 years old, he puts all of the toys back in the box and went and got a huge dictionary and put it down on the lid of the box. This dictionary was big. The toys kept getting out of the box. Also, there were jars, any of them that contained medicines, disinfectants, inks, various items, would be flying through the air. One bottle that had been taken from the house 2 days earlier reappeared. Nobody had brought it into the house. It reappeared. Another one flew around a corner, and one time there was a jar that was just flying through the air at tremendous speed. It stopped and floated to the floor when the 8-year-old screamed. Well, there was fruit put out because the people there said, well, maybe we have to make amends to this spirit that's causing this problem. And they said they could hear it when it was eaten. They put out bowls of fruit. And tooth-marked rinds were left in the bowls. No one in the household was going around this. His empty pockets, the 8-year-old's empty pockets, they'd find filled with stones. Rocks were falling. Picture glass and eggs were broken. Money disappeared and sometimes reappeared out of thin air. And the aunt, Miss Khan, decided, I'm going to see what I can do with this poltergeist. She purchased a safety inkwell, tightly screwed on the lid, and left it in her room. When she came back an hour and a half later, the ink was sprinkled all around the room, and the container for the ink was missing. And this is funny, really. She said she looked up at the ceiling where so many objects had materialized from out of thin air, and the aunt called out, I do hope the spirit will throw back the pot. It cost me 1 rupee 8 annas. She had no more finished saying that when the ink pot and the tightly screwed-on lid materialized in the air and dropped onto her bed. Fascinating things occur. And if ever you want to do any reading, read about the old gurus and the old masters, especially in India. There's a wonderful book called The Himalayan Masters that is absolutely incredible. And the student had to go and find these masters that were in different parts of India. And each of them were accomplished in certain ways. And materializing and dematerializing things was something that they did. It was a discipline. But as so many times they said, it is not that that is important. What is important is to understand the power that you have within yourself, the power that you have within yourself to make your life what you want it to be. But it's up to you to be a willing student, and to be able to learn the disciplines necessary. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. The next broadcast that you'll hear tomorrow is going to be pre-recorded, and that will be with Dr. Lundell on cardiovascular situations. On Thursday, I'll be talking to you from the Big Apple. I look forward to that, and you have a magnificent day or evening wherever you might be. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you later. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.